And I understood why the liturgist got it assigned. I don't know how many of you remember the Mary Tyler Moore show. Ted Baxter. This is a very Ted Baxter moment. This is a reading from the book of Esther. Esther 1, verses 1 through 2 and 4. This is what happened when Ahasuerus.
Just say it one more time, Bart.
Ahasuerus. Hey, that's even better. Ahasuerus, the very Ahasuerus who ruled from India to Kush, 127 provinces in all. At that time, Ahasuerus ruled the kingdom from his royal throne to the fortified part of Susa. In the third year of his rule, he hosted a feast for all his officials and courtiers. The leaders of Persia and Media attended, along with his provincial officials and officers. He showed off the awesome riches of his kingdom and the beautiful treasures as mirrors of how very great he was. The event lasted a long time, 6 whole months to be exact. After that, the king held a 7-day feast for everyone in the fortified part of Susa, whether they were important people in the town or not. They all met in the walled garden of the royal palace. White linen curtains and royal purple hangings were held up by shining white and red-purple robes tied to silver rings and marble posts. Gold and silver couches sat on a mosaic floor made of gleaming purple crystal, marble, and mother of pearl. They served the drinks in cups made of gold, and each cup was different. The king made sure there was plenty of royal wine. The rule about the drinks was no limits. The king had ordered everyone serving wine in the palace to offer as much as each guest wanted. At the same time, Queen Vashti held a feast for women in King Ahasuerus' palace. On the 7th day, when wine had put the king in high spirits, he gave an order to Mehuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zetha, and Carcass, the 7 eunuchs who served the king Ahasuerus personally. They were to bring Queen Vashti before him wearing the royal crown. She was gorgeous, and he wanted to show off her beauty both to the general public and his important guests. But Queen Vashti refused to come, as the king had ordered through the eunuchs. The king was furious, his anger boiling inside. Now, when a need arose, the king would often talk with certain very smart people about the best way to handle it. So the king said to them, "According to the law, what should I do with King Vashti, since she didn't do what King Ahasuerus ordered her through the eunuchs?" When Memucan spoke up in front of the king and the officials, "Queen Vashti," he said, "has done something wrong, not just to the king himself. She has also done wrong to all the officials and the people in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. This is the reason. News of what the queen did will reach all women, making them look down on their husbands. They will say, 'King Ahasuerus ordered servants to bring Queen Vashti before him, but she refused to come.' This very day, the important women of Persia and Media who hear about the queen will tell the royal officials the same thing. There will be no end of put-downs and arguments. Now, if the king wishes, let him send out a royal order and have it written into the laws of Persia and Media, laws no one can ever change. It should say that Vashti will never again come before King Ahasuerus. It should also say that the king will give her royal palace to someone better than she. When the order becomes public through the whole empire, vast as it is, all women will treat their husbands properly. The rule should touch everyone, whether from an important family or not. The king liked the plan, as did the other men, and he did just what Memucan said. He sent written orders to the king's provinces. Each province received it written in its own alphabet, and each people received it in its own language. It said that each husband should rule over his own house. Sometime later, when King Ahasuerus was less angry, he remembered Vashti, what she had done, and he decided about her. So his young male servant said, "Let the king have a search made for beautiful young women who haven't yet married, and let the king choose certain people in all royal provinces to lead the search. Have them bring all the beautiful young women together to the fortified part of Susa, to the women's house, to the care of Hengai, the king's eunuch, in charge of the women so that he might provide beauty treatments for them. Let the young woman who pleases you the most take Vashti's place as king." The king liked the plan and implemented it. Holy wisdom. Holy word. Thanks be to God. Please don't shoot the
messenger. Sit down, Rob. Thank you. So, if you were laughing or trying to suppress a laugh when Rob was reading this story, that's good, because this is supposed to be funny. It's kind of hard to believe that it's in the Bible, though, because it's funny in that dark gallows humor sort of way. I mean, the word for this story really is excess, as in excessive, over the top, absolutely absurd. And it was written a really, really long time ago by Jewish people to make fun of their Persian overlords. So I think it works. What do you think? I mean, because how ridiculous does King Ahasuerus come out looking? I mean, he really plays the part of the buffoon really well. So let's think a little bit more about the dark comedy of this. I want to walk you through it. The numbers in the story all point to this excess. So the empire, it says, had 127 provinces all the way from India to Ethiopia. Not true. The debaucherous party, did you catch that? It had all the princes and the governors and the military commanders, and it lasted for 180 days. That is how many months? Six? That's half a year. And then he extends the party for 7 days, because after a year of showing off himself and his riches and all this, he extends the party by 7 days, and instead of just the officials, he invites the whole capital city. And it was in an open bar. And after Ahasuerus had tried for half a year to show off all his wealth and all his power, he then summons the crown jewel to show her off as well. Queen Vashti is how we could pronounce it, or Vashti if you're from the south. He gets 7 eunuchs to escort her to the royal palace. 7 eunuchs, that's a bit excessive. And when he summons sages, which are kind of lawyer or astronomer types, to help him figure out what to do with this nasty woman, he summons 7 of them as well. Like I said, this whole thing is over the top. And when Ahasuerus asked Vashti to leave the party that she was throwing for the women, nobody knows how long that party was going on, and come to the boys' party at the palace, you know, remember, he is there with a bunch of other men, and they are drunk. And he wants to show off her beauty. And he wants her to dance for this crowd. Can you imagine? And the text says that Ahasuerus asks the eunuchs to have Vashti show up wearing the royal crown. Now, I did a little text study with this, and some rabbis speculate that he demanded that she arrive wearing only the royal crown. So what does Vashti do? We don't get to see her. We do not get to see her. She never appears on the stage. We don't get a sense about her thought process. She's given no lines in the drama. All we know is that she just said no, that she refused the king's orders. She said no. And that no, oh boy, that no sent shockwaves throughout the empire. And true to form, true to more excess, the king and his officials, they get really, really freaked out because Vashti, they think Vashti's no is going to then embolden all the wives from India to Ethiopia to say no to their husbands, and therefore that the whole world will fall apart. So what do? They depose the queen herself as a deterrent. You know, that'll teach him. And we don't know what happens to Vashti after that. We don't know what becomes of her, but we do know, in fact, if you read the rest of the story, that her no paves the way for a future queen known as Esther. Esther, and the summary of her story is that she saves her people. Esther plays a pivotal role in saving her people from certain annihilation. And Vashti's story underscores how important it is sometimes to just say no. I mean, think if you think back over your own life history, think about all of the no's that shape us into the kind of people that we are today. I mean, the time maybe that you stood up to that bully on the preschool playground and you said, no, leave him alone. Or the time maybe in your workplace that you stood up for your own dignity and you said, no, I'm not going to do that. Or that time that you bucked authority because, you know what, they were asking you to do violated your innermost principles. No, sir, I will not comply. Or maybe it's just a small instance, like when someone told a demeaning joke and you actually said, you know what, that's not funny. That's not okay. When have you said no to uphold your own integrity like Vashti? And how has that no been pivotal in your life? I mean, not only saying no when you confront a moral dilemma, but how has saying no changed you? No to the constant frenetic demands of daily life, or no in the face of pressures to conform, or no against your natural instincts to accommodate, guilty here, or to please or to avoid conflict. Those really small instances when saying no is the hardest thing to do. Or thinking, that's the small picture. Think of the big picture. How many no's have shifted the course of history? The whistleblowers, the protesters, the people who stood in front of tanks, the students who said, no, I will not leave my seat at this diner. Or Miss Parks, who said, no, I will not get up from this bus and give my seat to a white man. And then this chapter of our country's history, the chapter we're in, I think Vashti's invitation to us is, will we look back and remember that we replied with a resounding no? No, we will not allow you to detain and deport members of our community. No, we will not tolerate the separation of children from their parents. We will not tolerate the incarceration of over 12,000 of them. No, we will not tolerate places like Tornillo, Texas, where they are constructing more tents for literally thousands of children to sleep in. No, we will not let that happen. Or no, the repeated killings of African Americans at the hands of law enforcement, shooting them in their own homes with impunity. No, that is not acceptable. And no, the cartoonish excesses of greed in our own society, the parties might not be 180 days long and they might not drink of gold cups in front of marble statues and such, but the absurdities of income inequality are not that funny. See a recent article entitled America's Real Economy, Itn't Booming. Will we say no to the gutting of the social safety net at the expense of the most vulnerable in our midst, but to the benefit of the richest? No, we will not abide by that kind of injustice. What do we need to say no to? How loud is our no? How forceful is our no? How adamant is our no? You know, Vashti, I think she's really an often overlooked face of our faith. I had actually forgotten about her until this week. But I think she reminds us in her own way that sometimes faithfulness, sometimes loyalty to God, sometimes saying yes to the gospel means saying no to other stuff. Anna Carter Florence observes this: we don't have many role models for just saying no, especially from the Bible. It's true that Jesus puts his foot down on several occasions, but we tend to think of our Christian faith in terms of saying yes, yes to God, yes to Christ, yes to love, yes to the law. But maybe what we need to hear is that an equally important part of our life as Christians is finding the courage and the encouragement to say no when we need to. Not because it's the easy thing to do, amen to that, but because it is the right thing to do. You know, one reason why I really like these obscure stories from the Old Testament is that they remind us, really, that history isn't some linear, really straight line of progress, but it's cyclical. Time is cyclical because we keep coming back to the same problems time and time again. And what stories like this one from Esther reminds me is that there will always be greedy, power-hungry, egotistical tyrants. But there will always be people who say no. One more thing. Did you notice how God's not mentioned in this story? You read the whole book of Esther, Yahweh, God, the Lord, never shows up. It's true that God's not mentioned in this story, but yet the Holy One is at work here without a doubt. Because as cyclical as all of this is, so is the subtle faithfulness of God throughout the whole thing. Because I choose to believe that God is always stirring up the courage of people like Vashti to say no and to say it powerfully in the face of cruelty, humiliation, and injustice. As Stephanie said during her children's sermon, some no's a really short word, but sometimes it's really hard to say. But may God find in us such people to say no. So as part of our Faces of Faith series, not only are we dipping back into the Bible to reflect on faces of our collective faith, but we're inviting members of the congregation to share a story of a face from their faith, someone who is pivotal in the journey that they've endured, someone who is pivotal in helping them become who they are today. So Anne McGregor is going to share a story with us. Anne, here's the microphone. Take it away. Keep it close to your mouth and you'll be good.
Okay. Good morning.
Morning.
Now, my husband kind of wrote this out, but my thoughts and feelings are in it. This is a tribute to Jesse wealthy. I always thought I was a good Christian. My grandfather was a Presbyterian minister. So, you know, I was brought up. I was brought up the right way. Also, I worked as an aide for people with muscular dystrophy, and I thought that I learned a lot about caring for others. But I had not met Jesse Twilty yet. She showed me the light. When I moved to Tucson, I found St. Mark's in 1982. Jesse became my Tucson mom. She was the one who first welcomed me, and I could tell that she really meant it. I lived a good mile from the church, and it was a long walk, especially after a good mile from the church. And it was a long walk, especially, the church service. After the church service, Jesse insisted driving me home, but of course, she had to take me to lunch first. So this tells us about Jessie's generosity, but she was also such a caring person. When I had my hysterectomy about a year after I moved to Tucson, Jesse was with me all the way. She drove me to the hospital and stayed to reassure me through the whole procedure until after I got out of the recovery room. Now that is caring, and that is an example of why always think of Jesse, what it means to be a good Christian. For all these reasons, Jesse was a big inspiration. Was an inspiration for my card ministry in the past 13 years. I sent over 1,000 cards to people for uplifting. It takes a long time and effort, but it was worth it. Though the following of honor Jesse's memories as one of the finest people I've ever known, as well as one of the best of Jesus Christ. So this is a tribute to Jesse Wilkie.